Glyphosate is everywhere, and it's unavoidable. I think even those of us who are not ever using glyphosate in our yard are getting exposed through our food. And of course, that's oral. You're eating it, and then it messes up your digestive system, so it causes everything to get loose. It creates the leaky gut.
The enemy is close at hand.
The enemy they speak of is glyphosate, the herbicide in the popular weed killer Roundup, which is found in more than 750 other products in the U.S. Welcome to The Genius of Wellness, a podcast brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. Most people take an out-of-sight, out-of-mind approach to glyphosate, even while countries ban it and juries award multi-million dollar verdicts against it. It's cause for alarm for doctors Pat Hopkins and Steve Roberts, and functional nurse nutritionist Leslie Frodema, who paints a picture that's hard to ignore.
I live in a traditional suburban area. People are out cutting their lawns or having their lawn care companies cut their lawns and walking around with these containers strapped to their back of clear liquids and spot spraying their sidewalks so the weeds don't come up between the bricks. It's all around us. Translating that into seeping through our soil, getting into our water, spraying on vegetables at farms and being consumed by us. As Dr. Hopkins said, the enemy is all around us. It's in our backyards. It's in our refrigerator.
Stephen, there's so much research that's being done on glyphosate, and there's some juries that are making decisions in favor of people who have been exposed to it. But you also point to some diseases that it could have an impact on.
Yeah, the truth is there's very few situations where there is just one thing that caused one disease. But that doesn't mean that a potential environmental pollutant hasn't actually contributed to the development of that disease. And that becomes a much harder thing to try and prove, but it really puts us in a situation where I think we have to exercise the precautionary principle, where we have to say, you know what, the burden of proof and safety actually lies with the people who are actually putting this stuff out there and spraying it and putting it into our environment.
Well, one person who is critical of glyphosate and is also criticized for her opinion on it is Stephanie Seneff. She's senior research scientist at MIT. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
You hear Pat talk about the enemy is right here with the nice weather.
Yes.
You must feel that way year round.
Yes. Glyphosate is everywhere and it's unavoidable. People can do well to reduce their burden by eating an organic diet, but they're still going to be exposed. It's in the rain, it's in the tampons, it's in the Pampers, you know, it's in the clothing. It's probably in the drugs, it's probably in the vaccines. So it's hopeless to avoid it. And then I don't know how to treat it. Glyphosate poisoning is very, very difficult to undo.
The vast majority of consumers trust what they see.
Right. And the thing is, too, because it's available at the local hardware store, you can put it on the dandelions in your yard, you can spray it in front of your children. I mean, nobody's going to stop you from doing that. People think it's safe. They're so sure that it's safe that they don't trust it when someone says it's not safe. There's a level of disbelief, I think, that is really holding us up. I think it's the most dangerous chemical in our environment because of its insidious cumulative mechanism of toxicity and because of its perceived non-toxicity and its pervasiveness as a consequence of that, and also its careless use. People don't realize they have to be careful. If they're going to be working with it, they're extremely exposed. And it's a slow kill, which is the other problem, because you don't necessarily connect the dots.
Well, a couple of years ago, you made headlines by writing in an article that half of all children will be autistic by 2025?
Yes, I said first 2020. I said by the quarter century mark, and that number got widely distributed. But when I did the math, it came out as 2032. So it gives us another 7 years, which is not a whole lot of comfort. But that's when half the children born in 2032 will end up on the autism spectrum.
But Stephanie, there's so much research that discounts your proclamation.
There's a lot of people who are claiming that that's not possible, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens, you know. maybe I'm exaggerating, but the numbers say that if we continue with the exponential growth, now I think that may be hard to do because exponential growth usually slows down at some point. But on the other hand, I'm seeing that glyphosate affects the second and third generation more than the first one. If you're exposed during pregnancy, and there's a brand new paper that just came out where they exposed pregnant rats to glyphosate over a portion of their pregnancy. They picked exactly the portion that they knew was when the germ cells were being developed in the embryo. So the fetus, the female fetus produces its own germ cells very early during gestation. And those germ cells are extremely susceptible to toxic chemical influence. And they showed significant damage to all of the reproductive organs of the offspring. So it's a second generation effect of the rat that was exposed at a level that did not affect the rat at all. They couldn't see anything wrong with the rat, the mother rat that was pregnant. That was exposed didn't appear to be harmed by the glyphosate, but her grandchildren had a lot of issues. Issues with birth, so ending up with the fetus being born dead because the birth process was so difficult. That was like 30% of the female offspring had that problem. And they had ovary problems, mammary gland problems, testes, and prostate problems in the males. They looked at them under the microscope and found morphological damage. That is pretty amazing to me. So we're going to see that showing up soon in humans on top of whatever exposure they're continuing to get. So I think infertility is going to be a major crisis. It's going to get worse.
In the spring of 2019, a jury found that Monsanto, the maker of Roundup, had to pay $80 million to a 70-year-old man with cancer who had used it for three decades. And in 2018, another jury reached a similar verdict in favor of a groundskeeper with the same disease.
Right, I know about those two lawsuits. There's a third one underway right now, which is a couple. Both of them have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They used glyphosate extensively on their own property for many years.
But Bayer says on its website that the weed killer has been thoroughly tested, and there's an extensive body of research that shows that the products can be safely used and it doesn't cause cancer. Could it be other things that are leading to this cancer?
A lot of other things are also causing cancer. And the other thing is that glyphosate makes just about everything else much more toxic than it would otherwise be. This is what I'm seeing in my research, because when it messes up these proteins, it disrupts the liver's ability to and the kidney's ability to detoxify other toxic chemicals. It makes everything else much more toxic. For example, mercury. I think glyphosate totally messes up the sulfation system, and I've got a lot of data on that. Mercury depends upon sulfate for detoxification. So if you've got mercury in your teeth because of cavities, you're going to be much more susceptible to that mercury if you've also got glyphosate going on.
What's the stance of the EU? It always seems that they kind of take the first bite out of the apple to ban certain things. They're going to ban hydrogenated vegetable oil. They're going to ban phthalates. They're going to ban PBA. They're going to ban plastic. Are they taking a stance on the glyphosate?
They're getting closer. They had a big fuss, and then they finally ended up approving glyphosate for, I think, another 5 years. There's a lot of discussion going on in Europe, and there are individual countries that are trying to ban it. France is most aggressive in terms of getting rid of glyphosate, and other countries, I think, are banning it for personal use. You know, so there's all kinds of clamping down going on in Europe, but nothing as dramatic as what I would like to see. I mean, I think it should be banned worldwide. I think it is way too toxic to be anywhere on this earth.
When we look back to the earlier research that was done by the industry itself on glyphosate, their original claims were that it only affects the bacteria in our gut and wasn't absorbed into our system, that it affected the shikimate pathway.
Right.
We've talked a lot here about how the microbiome is actually a very integral part of maintaining our health. And so that actually isn't a reassuring finding that they found themselves. But from what I'm hearing from you, instead of using up glycine, it incorporates glyphosate into all the different proteins that our body needs to carry out its function.
Yes.
And it makes them very dysfunctional. We can kind of make an estimation as to what exact diseases and illnesses do we think glyphosate might have a much bigger contribution to the actual disease process.
That's absolutely right. I totally agree, and that's what I'm doing. I'm obsessed. I mean, I read papers all the time about glycine's role in different proteins. Monsanto researchers know that if you get rid of that glycine and you substitute alanine for that glycine in the code, in the DNA code, the protein is no longer susceptible to glyphosate at all. So I think Monsanto researchers know this is happening.
Which diseases would this?
Which disease?
Yeah. Oh, it's everything. It is so extensive you cannot imagine. It's going to disrupt oxidative phosphorylation in the mitochondria. It's going to cause amyloid beta plaque misfolding in the Alzheimer's disease. It causes severe dysfunction of sulfate homeostasis. The whole sulfate system is completely wrecked. And that starts with the gut microbes. The gut microbes have enzymes that convert sulfite into organic sulfur, like cysteine and methionine. Those enzymes have been shown experimentally to be disrupted by glyphosate, and it makes sense because of the glycine binding problem. There are people who have sensitivity to sulfur-containing foods. They can't eat them, and they often get an overgrowth of hydrogen sulfide.
Stephanie, when we sit down with our patients on a daily basis, how do we bring this information to them in a real practical, usable way to try to minimize their exposure?
I do have some suggestions. I've been trying to find literature. Animals are sick, and the people who are treating the animals are finding ways to help them, particularly the cows. The dairy cows are having a lot of problems because of excess glyphosate exposure. And they've shown glyphosate in the urine, and then they've also treated them with an interesting treatment program that involves sauerkraut juice, fulvic acid and humic acid, which is organic matter from the soil, and bentonite clay. So the idea is that the fulvic acid, humic acid, bentonite clay will bind to the glyphosate and take it out through the feces. And the sauerkraut juice is probably containing microbes that are metabolizing the glyphosate. So I'm very excited about the sauerkraut juice. And in fact, I think apple cider vinegar would have the same property, and also fermented foods like kombucha and kimchi. I think those foods are outstanding because the Acetobacter is among the very few microbes that can fully metabolize glyphosate, break it down.
And how do we know we have a glyphosate-free source of humic acid?
I agree. I think it's really frightening to think that the supplement could be supplying you with more glyphosate.
How do we measure it? In human beings?
You can measure it. It's been measured, in fact, certainly in the urine. Monica Kruger is a German woman who's done a lot of papers that I really like, looking at glyphosate contamination in various species. And her group, first of all, they measured glyphosate in the urine of people in Germany. And they found glyphosate in the urine in lots of people, but they found statistically significantly less glyphosate in people who ate organic diet, and also statistically significantly less glyphosate in people who were well compared to people who had chronic disease. She also found it in the animal urine, and she found it in the animal tissues. And she looked at the various organs of the cow and found the highest level, interestingly, in the lung, which was surprising to me, but also pretty high in the gut, of course. There's various people who have measured glyphosate levels in tissues. Anthony Samso claims that Monsanto found the highest levels in the bone marrow, which is very disturbing to me, that it's going into the bone marrow. It is definitely getting into the lymph system because it's affecting the lymph organs much more so than other parts of the body, I feel. Like all the glands, you know, the pituitary gland, the mammary gland, the ovaries, the testes, and the pancreas. Pancreas is getting hit hard by glyphosate. So I think it's going into the lymph system.
Stephanie, to follow up on what Leslie just talked about, what to say to patients who come in here, it would seem that it would be the sustained exposure that would be the biggest harm.
I don't know. And in fact, that's always been my big question, is what is the worst mechanism by which we're getting exposed? I think even those of us who are not ever using glyphosate in our yard are getting exposed through our food. And of course, that's oral. You're eating it, and then it messes up your digestive system. So it causes everything to get loose, you know, it creates the leaky gut. Glyphosate can get through barriers even when they're not leaky because it's actively taken up along amino acid channels. That's been shown.
Stephanie, let me open the question up to the doctors in the room because I'm curious, is it mainly a food supply issue that they feel, or does it feel that it's just the consumer use of it in our yards?
I think really because it's, as Stephanie's kind of mentioned, it's a unique pesticide herbicide in the sense that it's actually water soluble. I think it actually can get into our systems, not just food, but through water, through contact.
So I would look at it as the exposure, which can be sustained and irreparable, so that the ability for the glycine to come into your DNA makeup, your protein makeup, and stick in there. We're not talking about something you can wash out. That's
right,
the
I agree
problem.
With that. Yeah, I think that for random people, the food is the biggest problem. I think there's also a possibility of the air, and I don't know if this is true, but I suspect, because people have tested many beers and many wines, and they're finding glyphosate almost everywhere in beers and wines.
Now you're hitting close to home.
I know. That one really bothers me. Well, there's one organic beer that is tested free of glyphosate, which I was really happy about because that was the one I was drinking. So I was really happy when I heard that. The only one that I know of, the only beer that was tested and not found to have glyphosate was Peaks Organic, which is what I drink. So I was salvaged. But But I want to say alcohol. So if you think if it's coming from the alcohol, then you have to think about the alcohol and the gasoline. If it's coming from the alcohol, and the alcohol is coming from GMO Roundup Ready corn. So it concerns me that perhaps there's glyphosate in the gasoline, because the gasoline is now 10% ethanol. And glyphosate would not get broken down by the heat of the engine. It's very stable at high temperatures. So I think it's being spewed out into the air on the highway. And they do find that children who live near highways have a higher risk of autism. Whether there's other chemicals, of course, that are also in the gasoline. I realize that the fumes are toxic for many other reasons as well.
You're really saying we shouldn't worry about the cholesterol level?
I definitely don't think you should worry about cholesterol.
But we can save a lot of money there.
And back to the point of, do we have to worry about it more in the food versus can we spot spray our lawns a little bit? I think we have to take a step back and look at some of the statistics out there. A study in the Journal of Environmental Science Europe revealed that Americans have applied 1.8 million tons of glyphosate since its introduction in 1974. Worldwide, 9.4 million tons of the chemical has been sprayed onto fields. That's the equivalent to the weight of water in more than 2,300 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Wow.
It's also enough to spray nearly half a pound of Roundup on every cultivated acre of land in the world. I think we've had enough. So whether we're spot spraying in our lawn, I think it's enough.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's enough data to show it's time to stop.
I totally agree with you. That's really sobering, isn't it? And the United States uses more than any other country per capita. So we've got the worst problem. We also have the worst healthcare record. We do dismally on healthcare. It frustrates me when we talk, there's all this news about how our healthcare system is not effective and it's not cost effective, you know, and we're spending so much. And people aren't looking at the underlying cause of that. They're blaming the healthcare system for being defective, but the problem is people are really sick in this country.
Do you think that the non-celiac disease gluten sensitivity we see out there, do you think that that's actually its own independent entity, or is that really just glyphosate sensitivity that we're seeing?
I totally think it's glyphosate. In fact, I have a very good explanation for that. I've been working on that recently. I'm working it into the book that I'm writing on glyphosate, and it's quite amazing, actually, the science behind that, because there's an enzyme called transglutaminase that is linked to celiac disease. And of course, if you have celiac, you have antibodies, autoantibodies to transglutaminase. That enzyme gets loose in the gut and it messes up the gluten, changing glutamine into glutamate, which ends up making the gluten very difficult to break down. And that's how you end up with the problem, because the gluten protein becomes allergenic. I think this is actually an explanation for a lot of problems that we're seeing. For example, thrombosis. You know, we have the elderly people in America, many of them are walking a tightrope between thrombosis and hemorrhage, and they're taking all kinds of drugs. Thrombosis, I think, is due to the same problem, heparin sulfate binding of a different protein.
Now, I say to patients, if you want to see somebody having a thrombosis, they're already on Lipitor, they're already on a statin.
I know.
And they're still thrombosing, and we keep upping and upping and upping the statins, when in fact it's a thrombotic issue if the heparin sulfate is being substituted.
I know.
Hi, it's Ted, taking a second to remind you that The Genius of Wellness is your place for interesting podcasts, tips for living a healthier life, and doctors who provide a personal approach to healthcare. You can find it all, plus make an appointment at thegeniusofwellness.org. Now, back to our conversation.
You've said before that glyphosate is likely present in a lot of the biologic drugs we use. It's not just in our food supply.
Yes.
For a doctor, you know, we take these oaths that say first do no harm. This does have interest to me, to know that I'm actually not potentially introducing a greater problem into my patients. And so I suspect that we're talking about not just the biologic drugs, but also the supplements people take, like the digestive
yes.
enzymes that are out there. And so it's nutritional things as well. And then I know you've drawn attention to the glyphosate content in certain vaccines that are
yes.
probably, you know, inadvertently contaminated in these things.
Right.
And the question I would have is, we've talked about testing for glyphosate in our urine to know our own body's burden. But what about glyphosate testing from more like a quality control point of view in the pharmaceuticals and the supplements and the vaccines that are out there?
I think they should be required, you know, to test for glyphosate on any product that they release, really, at least to test several samples. I mean, it's expensive, right? I mean, it really gets out of hand. And of course, if you test one and it's negative, it doesn't mean it's not someplace else in another sample. It's very problematic.
How do we put together a team that represent key opinion leaders relative to the education of the next wave of caretakers? Because yes. I see the entire field, I don't want to say being dummied down, but saying the computer will answer the question. We don't really need to educate people. We need to just let them know where to find the answer.
I know. I mean, it's too bad the science is a bit complicated, but I think, and the other problem is that people, the level of disbelief, because they've been fed disinformation for so long, and they trust the government. They really think if the government thinks it's safe, it must be safe, you know? You're working against that. That's the same thing with the vaccines. I mean, vaccines are so awesome. They walk on water. There's nothing wrong with them. I mean, if you keep being told that, how can you face the fact that they're damaging your children?
Stephanie, do you have a couple of practical suggestions?
Organic, for sure. I think our model is good. I mean, I hope. We're trying very hard to stay healthy, and we eat 100% organic when we shop at the grocery store. Almost never buy processed foods. So it's mostly organic, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables, meats, seafood, dairy. We eat all of that. We eat bread too. We eat, but always organic, of course. Our basic thing is eating a wholesome organic whole foods diet. And in our case, we tend to eat a diet that's relatively high in saturated fat and cholesterol, interestingly enough. We believe in a sort of high-fat, high-cholesterol diet and also a high-sulfur diet. So we really go out of our way to eat sulfur-containing foods, and that includes cruciferous vegetables and onions and garlic. We have soup every day. We just throw a few fresh veggies into the soup to cook them very lightly.
Leslie?
And I think that was a good summary to say eat locally and act locally. Mm-hmm. Make your choices of buying more local organic food as much mm-hmm. as you can. And look in your local environment, starting with your own backyard, and don't use chemicals that contain glyphosate. And if you feel like you want to take on another level of
activism,
call your town and find out, you know, or talk to your neighbors. So
yes.
I think there's, even though the information in this podcast might seem daunting, I think there's a lot that an individual can do just by making choices of what foods they choose to buy, where they choose to buy their foods, and how they talk about this information with their own neighbors and what they do in their own yards. Most great changes, I think, start on a grassroots level. And so, you know, I hope that inspires us all to think about what we can just do in our own lives to make some simple changes that can, in the long run, if we all do it, have a great impact.
I love what you're saying. And that's the way I've been saying it, too, is that, you know, it's really, really difficult to change the legislators. They're so deeply bought that you just get frustrated at the government, at the national government level. But locally, you can have much more of a political effect. You know, I think people have been able to get, cities have been able to ban glyphosate. And so that's coming. And then just acting as, you know, teaching others to act the way you act by showing them, by buying organic food and then teaching your friends and your family to buy organic food, will put pressure on the farmers. I mean, the farmers probably could figure out how to grow organically efficiently if they knew they had to. That the food, if we don't buy the food, they won't sell it. They won't make it. We have a lot of power in the pocketbook.
If there is any issue that we should really look at grassroots level, with grass being the key word there, it's this. So, Stephanie, thanks for your time. Senior research scientist at MIT, you gave us a lot to think about and a lot to act upon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was fun.
And thank you for listening to The Genius of Wellness. If you like our podcast, do us a favor. Share it with your friends and family and write a review on this podcast channel. It'll help more people find us. The Genius of Wellness is brought to you by Hopkins Medical Group, serving patients in Greater Boston with a personalized approach to healthcare. Learn more at thegeniusofwellness.org. I'm Ted Canova. See you next time.